This is Florida Matters. I'm Emily Rogers, sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're talking with Keith Skorowicz of Leadership Tampa 2013 about the benefits and risks of integrating technology in a family with young children. Welcome to Florida Matters.
Well, good morning, Emily, and thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your family and your decision to teach your children about technology.
I have three children under six. I have a 5.5-year-old daughter that just turned three and a 10-month-old. After much discussion with my wife, technology is not going anywhere. You know, you have to kind of develop a set of rules to embrace it and how to expose your children to it safely so that they can use it and apply it in their lives.
Thank you for that information. What types of technology do your children use?
Well, outside of taking my wife's iPhone, which probably led to the discussion to purchase new technology for them, we ended up buying Google tablets for the children after much research into, you know, how I could control the content that goes to them and feel safe that they wouldn't be exposed to things that they shouldn't be.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit more about the concerns that you have. You mentioned content and access to websites.
Well, when we started out the thought process of getting them, you know, my son is 5.5. He's in kindergarten. They still have playground time. And they're exposed to what their friends have on the playground. And my son is the oldest in our family, but he has friends who are his age but who have teenage brothers and sisters, so they are exposed to more. To go back to your question about my concerns were being able to control what they see and don't see via passwords and special applications so that they can play their games and watch movies, but really not much else.
Great. That's very valuable information, especially for other parents. Keith, what are the benefits of integrating technology into your family life?
Well, I think, like I said before, the technology and the use of tablets isn't going anywhere. I think based on my discussions with some of his school teachers that eventually textbooks will end up on tablets because it's cheaper. They don't have to pay for the books every year. So getting them comfortable with using them is one thought. And then, frankly, just for them to consume entertainment, whether it's their movies or their TV shows or games. It hopefully provides some fun to them outside of all the other activities that they do.
Awesome.
And besides giving my wife a break with three kids and trying to control a household, that is crazy.
What type of information have your children actually shared with you and your wife about their experience with technology?
Besides, here, Dad, can you download a new game? I'm getting sick of this one. I don't know if they're sharing so much as right now they're just figuring it out. They're consuming it. And you know, like we were discussing before we went on the air about the kids on the playground. Angry Birds is a very popular game. So they know what is there to play and how to play it. So I hope that that helps them socially going forward.
Well, we do appreciate the insight that you've given us. And do you have any last comments that you'd like to share with other parents?
Be careful. You need to know what they're looking at and what they're not looking at. And my one piece of advice would be that, and I'm cheap, is to pay for the game or the app, because there's no advertisements, which is less of a chance that they'll end up on the internet.
Keith, thank you. Thank you so much for that information. It's very valuable. That's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Keith Skorowicz of Leadership Tampa, Class of 2013, the best class. You can hear this interview and find out more about Keith and his family on our website. The web address is wsfnews.org. Florida Matters this week was produced by Laura Tibbles, also of Leadership Tampa 2013. I'm Emily Rogers of Leadership Tampa 2013, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.
All right, Maria, thanks for joining us. So you're here from the AACSB today. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
It's my pleasure to be here, Jimmy. I work with schools throughout the world, and we work in an association that was founded in 1916 by a group of Ivy League schools. And what we do is we help these schools achieve accreditation.
Great. So tell us a little bit about the schools, the reach, and tell us about the background of the Ivy League schools as well.
Well, back in 1916, when business education was new to the market, now if you ask individuals if they have a business degree, it's very common that you'll find many who do. But in 1916, very few individuals had a business degree. It was a new market. So 16 schools got together to monitor themselves and to benchmark. Eventually, other schools started wanting to enter into this group they had formed. And after a while, they decided to set a set of standards. And then we became the organization that managed it for them because the Ivy League schools decided not to manage the process any longer. Right now, we have 1,300 member schools and 655 which are accredited. I work with those schools so they can maintain that accreditation.
Great. Sounds like a very fulfilling job. So with that in mind, tell us about your best Christmas present.
My best Christmas present was basically probably when I was 5 years old. I think you appreciate those gifts more. And I received a white fur hat. Not real fur, but a white fur hat. And that's the Christmas gift I remember most.
All right. Very exciting.
Very fashionable 5-year-old.
Yeah. Sure. So, you know, I'll tell you, speaking about fashion, I hear about the white hat. Actually, I think my daughter got one this year and she's 1 year old. What do you think about my outfit today?
I think you are very, very stylish. I would say you're the most stylish man in LT13.
Wow. All right. That's great. Well, what is LT? What does that stand for?
It stands for Leadership Tampa.
Okay.
And it's an organization that every year brings in a new group of individuals to function in leadership capacities and to grow their capabilities.
And would you say that's typically a stylish group?
I would say in terms of the women, yes. And in terms of the men, with the exception of you, probably not.
Okay. I'm not sure if that's quite a compliment or not, but thank you.
It is for you.
And, you know, so speaking of style advice, and I hear about how the women are very stylish within LT, as you call it. Who needs the most style advice amongst the males?
I would think there's this gentleman by the name of Luscious Lyle who probably needs a little help in that department.
Interesting. So Luscious Lyle, is Luscious his actual first given name?
Apparently there's a reason for that. I guess his wife has a story behind it. We never really heard the true story. We were promised the story at the Christmas party, but we didn't get it.
All right.
So it might be just something he made up.
Great. So let's change topics again. Let's go back to your work. Do you travel much for your work?
I do. Unfortunately, I'll miss the next Leadership Tampa event on the 23rd because I'll be in San Antonio, Texas.
All right. And tell us about that trip.
It's one of our biggest conferences. It's a dean's conference. Deans from business schools around the world come to this conference, and it's a networking event for them. So it's something they get to come together. They form networking groups, and it's something they enjoy very much.
Great. That sounds very interesting. You know, it's interesting to hear about fashion. And again, let's go back to that a little bit. Typically at these conferences, are the deans typically really fashionable there?
There is a standard uniform for deans. It involves khaki pants, white button-down shirts, and blue blazers.
How high do they wear their pants?
Well, you can tell the Europeans versus the Americans because they have the slimmer trim suits. But I would say they wear them in the normal length.
And are they typically pleated?
Yes. You see a lot of pleats.
Sure. So with Dean Benveniste at Emory, could you possibly put in a good word for Luscious Lips Lyle?
I'd be happy to. I'll be talking to him at the event, and I'll be sure to let him know that we refer to him as Luscious because I have the impression he may not know that.
Okay, that sounds great. Excellent. Well, thank you for joining us here today. Are there any last words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on to our listeners?
It's been enjoyable, and if you're ever in Harbor Island, stop by and we'll give you a tour of AACSB International.
Do you live there as well?
I wish. I live in Citrus Park area.
Can we tour your home also?
Sure. And actually, I need some help mowing the lawn, so come on down.
Okay, Maria. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Will Sadlowski, sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're talking today with Debbie Lumberg of Presenting Powerfully by Debbie Lumberg about the work she does. Welcome to Florida Matters, Debbie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Debbie, could you tell us about your company, what you do, and how you got started?
Absolutely, Will. It's a fun time to talk about it because Presenting Powerfully is the third generation of my practice. It started as Debbie Lundberg, Inc., became Debbie Lundberg Life and Business Coaching, and now it's Presenting Powerfully because the way we present ourselves, whether it's in writing, whether it's verbally, if it's online or in a video, that's how we're remembered. So Presenting Powerfully is not just the formal presentation. It's really about people increasing their communication, their behaviors, and their relationships.
And how is your company different from your competitors?
What's different about it is, I know it may sound a little bit cliched to say this, but there's not a ton of competition because there's room for everybody. I may not be the best fit for every company, but the companies where I get to work, it's fun because we work on those communications, behaviors, and relationships in the form of presentations, group and team learning events, other types of assessments, as well as coaching one-on-one so that people see the difference, they feel the difference, and they know that the results are there.
Could you give us an example or success story that you've had recently?
Absolutely. There's a person, I will not name his name, but he's a real up-and-comer. And one of the things he wanted to do is be known for presenting really well in the networking arena. And so when he came to me, certainly that's all in confidence, and I'm behind the scenes. And when he put everything together, I like to say, I can give you the tools, but you do the work. And now he's been doing presentations and getting really great reviews. And what that's doing for his confidence is tremendous. What it's doing for his company is getting more attention, and what it's doing for him overall is really positioning him for his future.
And Debbie, since you're so good at presenting powerfully, could you give us an example of something embarrassing that happened to you?
Absolutely. While I have a lot to choose from, I'll tell you about one day in particular. It's not usual that I have three presentations in a day, but I did this particular day. So the first presentation, I was speaking, and they asked me to speak at a podium because they were filming it, and I'm very much a mover. And on this top 10 list that I was sharing, on the fourth one, I knocked a glass of water all down my dress. So people started to kind of panic, and I thought, you know what, it's water, it's okay. So I made it through that one, got in the car, drove to Orlando, and when I got out of the car, I looked down at the seat only to see something that looked like chocolate in the seat, which was a protein bar that I'd been consuming. And I realized I'd been sitting in that seat, so probably the backside, which was not what I wanted people to be looking at necessarily, was covered in it as well. So I had an option to either wash the backside of that same dress that had been wet in the morning or just sort of skirt into the place and hope that nobody noticed. I opted to wash it off and just work through it. And then the last presentation, believe it or not, when I got there, they had everything set up for the formal presentation with PowerPoint, and it was showing it upside down. Upside down. And they just really wanted to get it right. And I said, you know what? The reality is, if I'm good at what I'm doing, I don't need the PowerPoint. Let's just go without it. But because they had the video, they really wanted to change it. So they ended up using all the books I brought as giveaways to stack it up and flip it over. And it was wobbly the entire time, and it turned out okay. But that was one day filled with unpredictable things. But you know what? Every time you overcome something like that, it just reminds you that you can do it and that the next time it happens, it's just another opportunity to make a change.
And last but not least, Debbie, what is something that you've not been asked today but are eager to share?
The reality is people are successful, and a lot of people have a fear of presenting, but they do it each day. When you answer the phone, when you answer the door, you don't know who's there, so you are presenting impromptu. So remember that you're good at it. And whether you work with somebody like me or somebody else, remember to invest in yourself, invest in your company, so that what you present is what you want out there, and that's what's remembered.
And what is the best way for listeners to contact you?
They can certainly reach me at 813-494-4438. They can go to my website, Debbie Lundberg, that's LUNDBERG.com, or they can email me at Debbie@DebbieLundberg.com.
And you can see photos of Debbie Lundberg taken by Mike Weeks and find out more about Presenting Powerfully by Debbie Lundberg on our website, WUSFnews.org. Florida Matters this week has been produced by Amy Carrasco and Mike Weeks. I'm Will Sadlowski, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Sharon Price, sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're here today talking with Elizabeth Henning, the Chief Financial Officer of Lowry Park Zoo. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
For our listeners who haven't visited recently, what are some of the featured programs that you have at the zoo?
Well, we really have something for everyone, for families with small children, to teenagers on their first date, to adults, and also for seniors who may be interested in educational programs. one of our featured programs is the Florida Manatee. It is a program that that we participate with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission. And because the manatee is a federally protected species, we have a special program at Lowry Park Zoo to care for the manatees and to be sure that we get them recovered as quickly as possible, whether it be for cold stress or red tide, and get them back out into the wild as soon as possible.
That sounds like a great program. Talk a little bit about how Lowry Park Zoo is funded.
We are a private 501c3 nonprofit organization on City of Tampa land. We have a structure, a financial structure, that is about 80% earned revenue and 20% contributed. What that means is that every time somebody comes through the front gate and buys a ticket, purchases food, purchases a gift at our store, we're earning revenue to support these very important programs. 20% of our revenues come from contributions. So that might be a special event held at the zoo, such as our beer tasting fest that's held in August. It may also be a private donor or a corporation that partners with the zoo to provide support.
As a follow-up, what is your biggest funding challenge?
Well, I'll tell you, we've talked about this quite a bit at the zoo, and our biggest problem is that we do not have the support that we need for capital. So when you come in through the front gate and you're buying that ticket, it's helping us feed those animals, but those dollars are not enough to provide the new exhibits or the new buildings that are required to actually do the operation of the zoo. So what we do every day is we work very hard to find new sources of revenue for capital funding.
On that note, share with us what is it that does drive the families into your zoo?
We have a very broad collection, and I'll tell you, what we focus on are animals that do well in the Florida climate or climates like Florida. So we have Asian animals, African animals, some animals that maybe you've never seen before. A special animal that we have right now that has actually just recently given birth is our okapi at the zoo. And this okapi is it's a dwarf giraffe. Many people have never seen one before, but if you come to our zoo, you'll get to see one.
Before we close, what's the one thing you can share with us about the zoo that most people don't know?
Being a chief financial officer and being in administration, oftentimes we don't get to go out and see the animals. But I was recently shared a story regarding one of our recent births. We also had a baby elephant who was born on Christmas Eve Eve. And baby elephants, when they're born, can't use their trunk. They don't know how to use the muscles. The muscles aren't developed. And so our little female elephant somehow got her trunk in her mouth, thought it was pretty neat, played with it for a little while, but then couldn't figure out how to get it out. So what she ended up doing is using her front foot to push the trunk out of her mouth, and then she could go on with her day and begin spending more time with her mother again.
Well, those babies sound like a good reason to come visit the zoo. And that's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Elizabeth Henning of Lowry Park Zoo. You can see photos of Elizabeth and find out more about Lowry Park Zoo on our website, wsfnews.org. Florida Matters this week was produced by Nate Carney. I'm Sharon Price, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thank you for listening.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Charlotte Diggs, sitting in for Carson Cooper today. And we're talking with Rolf Arnheim of Vistage about the work he does with that company. Welcome to Florida Matters, Rolf.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Tell us, what exactly is your title with Vistage?
I'm a chairman for Vistage, which is an international organization, some 15,000 executives worldwide.
How long have you been with Vistage?
A little over 10 years.
And what motivated you to join this company?
Well, the happy news is I was asked to become a chairman, so I did not seek it out.
What exactly does Vistage do? What is the vision for that company?
Well, the vision is to help CEOs become better leaders, to make better decisions, and to prepare themselves for the workplace in the sense that many of them do not have all the skill sets that they should have. In some cases, they're a strong salesperson. They could be strong in marketing, but they may not be very good in IT. They may not understand social media. They may not understand finance and accounting, the bottom line, budgets and so forth. And we try through speakers and through various issues that CEOs bring to this group in a confidential environment to help them enhance those skill sets.
In your opinion, doing this work, what is the critical issue that's facing CEOs today?
The biggest issue is leading in an organization that is multi-generational. each generation has its own set of values. Each generation thinks differently. They communicate differently. They come to the workplace with a different set of expectations, trying to manage this and keep them motivated and keep them all in the focused on the mission and on the vision of the company.
What haven't I asked you that you would be burning to tell people about Vistage?
I think there's a brand issue. A lot of people, and particularly in the business community, do not know what Vistage is. And as a result of that, trying to reach out to business owners, business leaders, and get them into this program is a continuing challenge. From the other side of the coin, I think just about everybody in this country wants to work in a place where they can see the opportunity for advancement. They can meet the requirements of their family, but they have huge expectations in terms of what they want from their leadership.
That's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Rolf Arnheim of Vistage. You can see photos and find out more about Vistage on our website, WUSFnews.org. Florida Matters this week was produced by Rod Grabowski, and I'm Charlotte Diggs, sitting in again for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. This is Florida Matters, and I'm David Bodie, sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're talking today with Richard Reeves of the Tampa Bay Rays to learn a little bit more about what he does. Welcome to Florida Matters, Richard.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Well, Richard, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do specifically for the Rays?
I'm the general manager of the Rays, so I'm in charge of recruiting all the players, all the scouts, and everything.
Good to have you here, because now you'll be able to answer a lot of the questions that a lot of our fans have on their mind. Tell us about the off-season changes that the team has gone through.
Huge off-season changes. We've got a lot of people leaving and a lot more people coming. We lost B.J. Upton, James Shields. Both of those are huge pieces that from offense and defense both. Shields probably pitched more innings than anybody in Major League Baseball. He was a great winner and a huge piece of the community, and it's going to be a big loss. That's something we're going to have to fill on a lot of different levels. So that's a scary one. BJ, a bunch of home runs, one of the best defensive players on the Rays, and we're going to have to make that up. We're still working on those kind of moves and what we're going to do. Those are the two biggest losses.
Who do you see as some of the key players that will step in and fill some of those voids?
It's a great question, which means that I don't have a good answer. But we've done great recruiting. We've got Will Myers, who was one of the best recruits in all of baseball. So we've got him coming in. We've got a lot of changes in the bullpen. We may pull some people up. We just lost J.P. Howell just the other day. So there's going to be a lot of pitching changes, but still the Rays is all about pitching. So when we get that right, we'll let you know. But there's a lot of, it's just moving chess pieces around so much. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot going on there. You know, you've got people, Carlos Pena's gone. You know, so you've got a lot of people that we're moving around. The defense is going to change, but it's still, to your point, it's going to count on pitching.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that the Rays brings to the Tampa Bay area, of course, is a great sporting organization. But with that, you know, you want people to come and enjoy the Ray games and so forth. So mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about some of the packages that you have available for individuals or businesses mm-hmm. in order to draw people to come see the Rays play. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because there's a whole myriad of season ticket, half season, you know, 20-game packages that you can basically figure out your budget and you can buy a package that's based on that. ESPN does a survey every year of every professional team, whether it's football, baseball, hockey, anything, and we are the least expensive professional team in all of sports. It's a big message to get out and let people know we'll figure out a package that'll work in your budget and get you in Tropicana.
Why do you think you're the least expensive team in professional sports?
That's a great question. I think a lot of that depends on this market. I think Tampa Bay is saturated with sports. It's very competitive for things to do, particularly you look at summer and the beach and everything there is to do around Tampa Bay. We got to compete with all that, and I think we try our best to do it, and we do it with competitive pricing.
Well, as we get toward the tail end of our interview, is there anything that you would like the listeners to know that we haven't had an opportunity to talk about so far?
Well, I think, you know, since this is NPR and a lot of breaking news happens on NPR, I think it's probably good to break this news here. We will win the World Series in 2013. And, you know, so just hang in there. Buy those biggest packages. Buy the 80-game season tickets because you don't want to miss a game this year.
Richard, the big question that I know is on our listeners' minds is, what about a stadium? A lot of talk in the community and is there anything you can share with us?
No.
Well,
but I will tell you this. The biggest thing is that something's going to happen eventually. Everybody knows that. If you've been to Tropicana, you've seen it. You know where what we're playing in. It's often called the worst stadium in all of baseball. So something's going to happen, but our position now is we're not going to look at any single thing until we get an opening to look at everything. So it's not one single market that we're looking at.
That's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Richard Reeves of the Tampa Bay Rays. And you can see photos of Richard and find out more about the Rays on our website at WSFnews.org. And this is Florida Matters, was produced by John Unger. And I'm David Bodie sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thank you for listening.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Jimmy Ulrich sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're talking with Chip Kerberly of GTE Financial Services about the work he or she does. Welcome to Florida Matters, Chip.
Thank you for having me.
Chip, on Florida Matters today, we're talking about the current mortgage market. You're close to it at GTE. Can you give us a landscape?
Sure. Right now, we're at historic low rates. Great time to get a mortgage. Rates are down at around 3%. We're doing all sorts of programs such as HARP 2 for refinancing folks that are upside down in their mortgages who owe more than what their houses are worth. There's a great government program out there that we're part of that we can refinance your home for you.
Well, that's great. So let me ask you a question. If I've walked away from two or three homes in the last 2 years and I'm about to walk away from the fourth, am I a good candidate for GTE Financial Services?
Not likely.
So mortgage is not for everybody.
Not for everybody, but you'd be amazed at how forgiving the market is right now.
Okay. So maybe a bruise or a bump on my credit report works, but not anything bad.
Come in and talk to us. We'll set you up.
All right. And tell us a little bit about GTE Financial Services and the other financings y'all do.
GTE Financial is a federally chartered credit union, open to membership to specific select employee groups, but also to the community at large. We do a full array of financial services from savings, lending, insurance, investments, you name it, we do it.
Fantastic. And how long have you been with GTE?
I've been with them as an employee for 1 year. I was on their board of directors for several years before that.
Fantastic. Well, Chip, thank you. And that's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Chip Kerberly of GTE Financial Services. You can see photos of GTE Financial Services and find out more about GTE on our website, WSFnews.org. Florida Matters this week was produced by Chip, and I'm Jimmy Ulrich, sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
This is Florida Matters. I'm Amanda Uliano, sitting in for Carson Cooper. We're talking with Elizabeth Zabak of Carlton Fields about the work he or she does. Welcome to Florida Matters, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
How are you today?
Just great.
Well, tell us about, first of all, tell us about Carlton Fields.
Well, Carlton Fields is a law firm which is located throughout Florida, Atlanta, and now in New York. We just opened an office a few months ago up in New York City. We have over 300 lawyers and government consultants.
That's wonderful. Now, what exactly do you do over at Carlton Fields?
I'm the chief marketing officer for Carlton Fields, and I handle everything from communications, business development, website, media, and the like.
Well, take us through a typical day over there. What do you do when you get in the morning?
Start running. There is no such thing as a typical day. We may have many, many things going on at the firm and really responding to what our lawyers are doing, but also setting strategy for various things that we are trying to accomplish.
Now, you said you're the marketing director. I mean, it seems that you can't throw a rock in Tampa without hitting an attorney. So how do you differentiate your firm from the others?
You can tell I'm talking to a lawyer. Well, we've been around for over 100 years. We cover a wide range of practice areas. One way we do differentiate ourselves is through client service. We really are focused on the client, providing them with resources that they may need that differentiate us from other law firms.
That's fantastic. What else can you, if there's one thing you wanted to leave our listeners with, what would it be?
Now, that's an interesting thing, an interesting question. One thing about my law firm or about what I do, In what context?
I think to move forward with the theme that we're having is about your law firm and how you as the marketing director would want them to remember your firm.
I think we are in many ways a small firm that plays large. We can compete with the bigger law firms, even though we might be considered in this market a large law firm, but we compete on a national basis with larger law firms, even though we are a smaller firm nationally.
That's great. And thank you, Elizabeth, for joining with us today. And that's Florida Matters. We've been talking with Elizabeth Zabek of Carlton Fields. And you could see photos of Elizabeth and find out more about Carlton Fields on our website, WUSFnews.org. Florida Matters this week was produced by Adrian. And I'm Amanda Uliano sitting in for Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.